racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Welcome once again into the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bupka, here with STL Golf Geek, the one and only Jay Randolph Jr. And wow, the PGA Tour golf is back. And boy, did it sound good, Jay, to hit those drivers off that first tee.
Well, it was just great to see actual competition. I mean, I think we talked about the exhibitions that we saw and the difference in those two events. But, Bob, to have actual golf, to have a trophy on the line and have the leaderboard that we had going into Sunday and have Sunday play out the way it did, it was great to have golf back. I thought it was fantastic.
Let me ask you this, Jay, because I've been dying to get your opinion. Anticipation of the event without spectators, I thought for sure it was going to have a major impact. But not too far into the broadcast, Jay, I was just focusing on the golf. It seemed like the announcers, to me, were having more trouble handling, calling the action without fans than the players were playing without fans.
There definitely was a different sound and tone. It almost looked like a Champions Tour event. And no offense to the Champions Tour, but damn near nobody goes to those tournaments. You had a couple interesting scenarios, and you're going to have one probably. You look at the playoff, Bob, and Morikawa hits it right with a 5-iron, and Berger hits it in the fairway, and Berger plays a second shot before Morikawa. And from the eye and from the fairway, it looked like he had stiffed it. He hit a really good shot, but it ended up going through the green. Now, if Morikawa had been in the fairway at that point, he would have had no indication other than to watch the shot that Berger played and feel like Berger was close without, you know, the gallery going, ooh, or ah, or exalting or going crazy when a shot's close. That aspect, I think, is, you know, was very close to being kind of an issue there. But for the most part, it was kind of nice not to hear you're the man or be the ball or, you know, some of the junk that said. You do miss a little bit a reaction or two, I think, from the players that's enthused by the crowd. But I thought it came off pretty darn well.
I tell you, that's an impressive point you brought up. Morikawa had no way of ascertaining how great Berger's shot was. And had he heard the crowd not get excited, he would have had to say to himself, well, obviously he didn't hit it very close, and it would have freed him up just a little bit more. Boy, that's some keen insight, Jay. I applaud you on that.
I thought about it when it was going on because Morikawa had hit it right. He had a terrible five, and he hits it in the right rough with a 5-iron. On 17, and he really didn't have any other play at that point except to play down to the left of the green, which he did, and then hit the brilliant pitch shot or wedge shot to look like he's going to make par, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, where he missed, and obviously Shoffley missed at 17. But those were some of the little nuances that I'm watching for. You know, they've made it pretty clear the first five events are going to be without spectators. The one other thing I thought was interesting is between the two tours, Bob, they tested about 800 people. And when I say the two tours, I mean the PGA Tour and then the Korn Ferry Tour that was down at the Dye Course at TPC Sawgrass. So they tested about 800 people. You know, the caddies, the shot link people, the spectators, probably Nance, you know, everybody that was kind of on site for the week at both events. On the PGA Tour, not one player, caddy, anybody involved tested positive. On the Korn Ferry Tour, there were three. So that was a little side note that I thought was a positive. And, you know, you could, you know, you're looking at Mark Russell giving elbow bumps to Daniel Berger after he wins instead of a fist bump or a high five. So, you know, golf is back, and it was great to see.
Let me ask you this, Jay. We're going off script here, but I think it's important. I think our listeners would like to know, based on what transpired at Colonial, are we more likely to have a Ryder Cup without fans, or less likely to have a Ryder Cup without fans?
I think it's just such a different animal, Bob. You and I talked about it last week when the PGA of America quietly gave Steve Tricker two more captain's picks, but made no mention of spectators at Whistling Straits. I think the Ryder Cup is such a unique type of an event. For people that don't know, I mean, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, this thing truly was an exhibition. And it was more of an honor and a get-together, and it didn't have any of the fierce competition that came out of things when it went away from just Great Britain and Ireland to Europe and opening it up for Europe and the global game changing. So, you know, we've heard a lot of European players. We've heard Brooks Koepka say it just won't be the same. I don't know if there should be a Ryder Cup without fans. I don't know, because we saw outstanding tournament golf at the highest level without fans at Colonial, but Colonial and the Ryder Cup are very different. I don't know. And it's going, you know, we talk about fans coming back, Bob, at the second Memorial event. Is they're going to play back-to-back weeks in Dublin, Ohio? We're only talking about 8,000 people. You know, we're not talking about 25 or 30,000. So, you know, if you're at 8,000 by the second or third week of July, should you really be at 25,000 by the first week of September or the second week of September? I don't know. They're going to have to make a decision, I think, pretty quick in the next couple of weeks. Maybe they'll wait till after that first event where they have spectators. I'm not sure, but I mean, you know, a lot of people may have to make travel plans. We know the travel situation is totally different. Think about all the people, Bob and Janice, that bought packages to go to the Ryder Cup. So, you know, while it was great to have tournament golf back, it's different tournament golf as it relates to spectators.
One thing that I think helps the Ryder Cup, Jay, and see if you agree with me on this one, you know, the U.S. Open is going to be played the week before. So, you know, European players are certainly not going to want to pass up a major, so they'll do whatever they have to do in advance of the U.S. Open. Now they're already in the United States. It's not that far, obviously, from New York to Milwaukee, so the travel time is not going to be of any major consideration. I think that's a factor in their favor.
Well, it certainly is that you would have the people here. It's not like, you know, and no offense to those tournaments, it's not like you're playing the John Deere and then the Travelers, and then here we are at the Ryder Cup. You have a significant major championship the week before. Now, the other thing, you know, to go off script a little bit, that just fascinates me, and we knew there might be some quirks to the points and the Ryder Cup decision that was made last week to give them to give Captain Stricker six picks. Well, okay, let's just say, for the sake of argument, right now Patrick Cantlay, or we'll use your man Kevin Kisner with Dwayne Bacha aboard. Kevin Kisner's 14th in the point standings right now. Let's say he's 14th the week that Captain Stricker makes the picks. Well, he doesn't get one of the six spots that are earned by points. And let's say Stricker decides not to take him. And then Kisner goes to Wingfoot and wins the United States Open. That means the United States Open champion, who was 14th or 13th in the points, is not playing in the Ryder Cup because the team's already set before the U.S. Open. Again, it's nitpicking. I mean, we should just be happy we saw golf balls struck. You know, we've talked about what it's going to be like when those guys hit Magnolia Lane in November. This is all new to us, and everything's adjusted on the fly. I just thought for the first week, it showed all the work that the tour had really put into it, with the testing, with the protocol, with the way the television situation had to work with, you know, five or six different points across the United States of how the broadcast is being put together. So while there may be some goofy things that may occur and some oddities with this year's Ryder Cup or this year's majors, I'd rather have it than not have it.
Well, speaking of goofy things, I was thinking the other day, Mr. Randolph, it's going to be unique. We'll be down there covering the Masters and likely to see a lot of Christmas decorations up already.
Yeah, maybe JD, John Daly, should get some ornaments to sell.
Yeah, he'll be in the Hooters parking lot, that's for sure. Well, somebody that was really excited about the fact that live golf came back, and he certainly played well, Daniel Berger. Let's give a listen to what he had to say after that victory.
Yeah, it was a hard-fought battle today, and I just kept telling myself, why not me today, you know, from the beginning tee shot to the end. And some things went my way, obviously, a couple missed putts here and there for Colin, but in the end, it was a great week, and, you know, I've been playing some great golf for the last couple months, so I'm just excited to be back in this position. I think when I won my first couple times, I took it a little bit for granted, thinking that every year was just going to be easy and you'd have that chance to win, but it's tough out here. It's cutthroat, and the best players in the world every week are showing up, and you know, I worked my butt off the last year to be in this position, and I'm just glad it all paid off. Everyone involved with making this tournament go did an unbelievable job. You know, it was a little different without fans, but didn't feel like it wasn't a PGA Tour event. You still felt that pressure. You still felt like there was so much on the line, and it's a little different, obviously, being, you know, 5-6 feet apart from everyone, and, you know, not shaking hands at the end of the round, and, you know, obviously following social distancing, but the tournament was a huge success, in my opinion.
Well, huge success. It was a huge success for one man that strolled into a casino in Las Vegas, looked up on the board and saw that big burger, a whopping 70-1. He plunked down $1,000, walked away with $70,000. Boy, and I'm going to steal what Daniel Berger said. He kept saying all week, why not me? Why not me? So the next time I get in front of a blackjack table, that's what I'm going to say to the dealer. Why not me? Why not me? I've tried everything else. Nothing else has worked.
Maybe he'll look you in the eye and say, because the odds are stacked against you. And the odds were stacked for a while against Daniel Berger. I mean, this is a guy, let's look at Daniel Berger. Guy comes out rookie of the year on the PGA Tour. He wins in 2016 and 2017, both in Memphis, both the second week of June. But then here comes the wrist injury, and it limits him to just 20 events. And he, you know, I mean, he was really struggling. But you look, and he mentioned how well he was playing before the break. You could make the argument that other than somebody that had won, really the last four or five events before the break, Daniel Berger was playing as well as anybody, virtually every round under par. But this was huge, you know, and yeah, you can talk about the missed putt of Schauffele on 17 in regulation and then Morikawa missing the little one on 17 in the playoff. But Daniel Berger just strode through the back nine, made a couple of key putts, one for birdie, one for par that were a pretty good length. And this is a case in point of, as my dad used to say, just keep playing, son. Someday maybe they'll pat you on the back and give you a trophy. And that's what they did with Daniel Berger. Huge win for him. Congratulations. And now you wonder, with the way he was playing prior to the break, coming back with this victory against this stellar field, what does it set in motion for a healthy Daniel Berger?
Good point there, Jay. He actually makes a huge leap in the world rankings. He shows up at Colonial. He's outside the top 100, actually 106th, and now he is 31st. So nice move there. What about Morikawa? Does he join the Doug Sanders Club as a three-footer that's going to be remembered for a long, long time with that miss giving the victory to Berger?
No. This kid has got major game. I think he'll push that to the side and show up at Harbortown, and let's put it on the tee and let's go. He's got big-time game. He showed a lot on that back nine to put himself in position and keep making putts. Now, the mistake came on, you could really say the mistake came off the tee. I mean, he missed the fairway with a five iron. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the show, had to play down left, hit a fantastic shot up the hill and let it roll out to where it looked like, okay, he's going to make par and we're going to 18 for an extra playoff hole. But this is golf. You saw an instance within a 40-minute stretch of Xander Schauffele, arguably one of the best players in the world, miss a short one on that 17th. And then in the playoff, Morikawa did. I don't think this will affect Morikawa. Let's just remember that, 21 cuts made for Morikawa. He hasn't missed a cut since coming out on tour. The record is 25 to start a career. That was Mr. Woods. I mean, this is big-time stuff. Morikawa is moving up the ladder quicker than Vic Hovland, quicker than Matt Wolf. Morikawa showed a lot, and I think he'll have no problem shaking this off, Bob.
Yeah, he's extremely talented. I like his attitude. I really think he's good for the game. Somebody that I couldn't take my eyes off of was Bryson DeChambeau. I don't know if he was in wrestling matches at night, but that body that he has now, I mean, it was such a neat thing, because the announcer came on and talking about Gary Woodland, reigning U.S. Open champ. Gary wanted to play better golf this year, so he lost 20 pounds. Bryson DeChambeau wanted to play better golf this year, so he gained 20 pounds. I mean, there's a little bit of everything for everybody out there.
It just shows you the difference in the way guys approach and their mindset. And nobody frustrates me in the game more than Bryson DeChambeau. I can't stand him. However, I'm going to tell you that I have to respect him. I have to give credit. Whether I think the stuff he does is as goofy as you can get, it doesn't matter, because he believes it. And by believing it and working as hard as he does, he's able to be an elite player. I saw him on Saturday, Bob. He had a four-footer, one that you just kind of let trickle in and get out of the hole and get your par. He hit it 8 feet by. He was trying to jam it in that hole with that goofy setup of his on the putting green. And I was like, what is wrong with him? Why is he doing this? But then I see him on Sunday make that putt off the back fringe and look like he's going to win the golf tournament. He really believes that by adding the weight, as Gary Player said 30, 40 years ago, we're going to have a guy hitting it 350 off the tee every time. And it looks like Bryson's trying to be that guy. So, there's going to be weeks when all of his mojo and all of his regimen works perfect. And there he is. But I also think there are going to be some weeks where you can't find Bryson DeChambeau.
Well, we actually have to be a little bit careful, Jay Randolph Jr. and yours truly. Can you imagine if word gets out, Bob and Jay criticizing Bryson DeChambeau, who only studied physics at SMU? If they assigned me physics, I'd probably never even be able to find the classroom.
I mean, again, I as somebody who has grown up around the game, been around a lot of teachers, still am today. He thinks there's a different way and a different approach to playing the game than 98% of the other players. Hey, maybe he's figured it out. Maybe he's going to revolutionize the game. Maybe everybody's wedge and four iron are going to be the same length. Maybe everybody's going to look goofy over a putt and look like they're locked into something. But the bottom line, as much as it irritates me, I got to give him respect and kudos to him. And he also does a lot of stuff away from the game to benefit charity. And as much as the guy frustrates me, he's a world-class player.
Well, if we see more and more guys wearing Ben Hogan hats, which, by the way, Bryson DeChambeau first put one on when he was about 12 years old, has never taken it off. His idol happens to be Ben Hogan. That's a pretty good idol to have. Justin Rose had a pretty good event. Actually had a putt on that very last hole, Jay, and committed the all-time cardinal sin. When you absolutely have to make a putt, the first thing you have to plug in, absolutely beyond any question of a doubt, is you got to get it to the hole. He left it an inch short.
I mean, think about that final round Sunday, the setup, Bob. You got Rory McIlroy, who's never played at Colonial, the number one player in the world. It looks like he's about to win the golf tournament. I mean, it looks like he might just say on Sunday, you know what, I'll go ahead and put this one to bed. I'll show everybody I am the best player in the world. I came back here to play Colonial for the first time. You had Justin Thomas right there, the number one, with a chance to become the number one player. You had Spieth, who at times looked like he knew what he was doing, and at times back to where the guy can't find a fairway. You had Shoffley. I found it interesting that Rory just came up with nothing. And I mean nothing on Sunday. And Ian Baker Finch and Nick Faldo talked about his final round troubles, where it seems like he has a little bit of a slow start and is not able to come out of it. Thomas couldn't get anything going, and neither could Spieth. So we had a tremendous leaderboard, and we had a tremendous finish. It just wasn't Rory's day, Spieth's day, to get back into the mix for Justin Thomas. But with that type of field, Bob, it was really a good start for the PGA Tour.
Very well said, Mr. Randolph. And once again, it certainly was great to have the PGA Tour back in action.
Well, and we'll talk about him back again at this week's RBC Heritage right after I tell you a little bit about where I call home, Gateway National Golf Links in Madison, Illinois. Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning link-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses. Spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right. The iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one. To make your tee time the best way and the best rates are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase the season pass. Walters Golf Management manages 8 other properties, and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates, gatewaynational.com.
Okay, Colonial, in the rearview mirror, we head down to Hilton Head. Normally it was an event that players kind of relax coming off the heels of playing in the Masters. This year, I think the intensity is going to be extremely high. Limited opportunities to do things here in this crazy, crazy season, even though Jay and I are certainly delighted to be able to be talking about golf. But I like Hilton Head, and I think you do too, Jay.
fantastic venue, old school golf course, small greens, and a stellar field gathering. You do have the potential in South Carolina of about a 20 degree different temperature change from when they would have played the second or third week of April to what they're going to find this week. But these guys are all ready to go. This is not football, it's golf. Even though Bryson DeChambeau looks like he's ready to play linebacker for the Steelers. And DeChambeau is there. Rory is there. Ricky is there. Sergio, last week's winner, Daniel Berger. Spieth electing to play. Morikawa, who just continues on that trek to try and tie or surpass Tiger with 25 consecutive starts without a cut. JT, Brooks Koepka, who's still working his way back. Dustin Johnson, who was pretty flat last week. Justin Rose, John Rahm, Patrick Woodland, Gary. I mean, look at this field. Throw in young Fitzpatrick from over the pond. Vic Hovland. Kuchar. Your man Kisner. G-Mac. Harold Varner III, who was such a great story early in the week last week on the lead. You know, I wondered how you would see guys return. And, Bob, look, how about some of the veterans and the over 50 set? While Vijay got all that static for whatever reason, because he wanted to play in the Corn Ferry Tour event, and he got such backlash that he was supposedly taking a spot away from somebody, even though he was exempt in the field last week. And so Vijay, I guess he thought he was doing the right thing, didn't play, but yet he's going to play on the PGA Tour in the RBC field along with Bernhard Langer, who is just, you know, unbelievable, and Ernie Els. So it's going to be a great week. I can't wait to see it. And, you know, it's a fantastic golf course in a wonderful spot, and hopefully it'll go just as well as Colonial.
You know what, Jay? Harbortown, I would say that, you know, the likes of an Ernie Els or a Bernhard Langer or a Vijay Singh, if they were ever to win on the PGA Tour, I could not think of a better golf course to provide the most opportunity for them to accomplish that goal.
Couldn't agree more, almost in a sense, like last week with the yardage being just at 7,000, even though it plays at par 70. This is a shorter golf course. This is a position golf course. This is, you know, also a second shot golf course. Knowing where to be on, if you can find those tight greens, I think you're right. You look at a guy like Hale Irwin, who I think won it three times, seemed to play well there, you know, until he hit the Champions Tour because of his tremendous accuracy and his iron play. So, yeah, Bob, we saw last week, 61-year-old Tom Lehman shoot, 65 or 66 in the opening round.
Yeah, it was a nifty little 65. Congratulations to Tom Lehman. The Champions Tour, by the way, does not resume until the end of July, actually July 31st to August 2nd, the Allied Championship at Warwick Hills in Grand Blanc, Michigan. Used to play the Buick there, had many a good time in Warwick Hills, a great golf course, and I know the Champions Tour players anxious to get back there.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mentioned a number of times that this year the Champions Tour was set to come back to St. Louis the third or fourth week of September, and they're kind of in a debate whether or not to have the event, because it appears they may be spectatorless for a while out there because, you know, and we're talking about people that are in more of a category age-wise to potentially be more, at risk of acquiring the disease. There had only been five events completed so far. So, Bob, the Champions Tour, as they start to get back and start to figure out their schedule, they're going to add three players to each event from 78 to 81, give a couple more guys the opportunity, and now they're going to extend kind of a two-year season with the 2020 season being merged with next year's season. So, you know, we hope everything will be good, and as you said, they're on track for the last week of July, first week of August.
Well, a good way to put a bow tie on it, Daniel Berger is back after the wrist injury with a win at Colonial. Even better, the PGA Tour is back on track.
After a short pause, we'll hear from the mouth that roars from morningread.com, Alex Maselli. See what he thought about golf being back in Fort Worth.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Don't forget, if you'd like to drop us a line or give us your thoughts or opinion on the show, we'd love to hear from you. I'm STL Golf Geek on Twitter, while Bob, the VOG, the voice of golf, Bob Bubka, VOG. Check us out on Twitter.
One of my favorite times in the show, we bring in Alex Maselli, the founder and publisher of Morning Read. And Alex, now that Colonial clearly in your rearview mirror, give me your take on PGA Tour coming back, no spectators. Overall, how'd you view it?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I mean, I watched it on television and it didn't really bother me that there were no spectators. Obviously, they talked about it a couple times, but you know, I mean, the play, I thought the play was really pretty relatively good considering that everybody's been off for 3 months. You know, playoff victory by Daniel Berger, but I just thought everybody played pretty well. I mean, there's always going to be the hiccup here and there, but generally the people you watch, which obviously, as you know, Bob, they're not showing you the guys that are 5 over, 7 over, 8 over for the day, unless it's Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods. Generally, you're showing you the guys that are playing well. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I didn't see anything that, you know, concerned me per se, except for I think these guys just jumped right into their routine so easily that the social distancing thing went right out the window when they were on the golf course.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One highlight I think of the week, and I'm dying to get your impressions. Golly, what Bryson DeChambeau has transformed himself from a wide receiver to a middle linebacker and hitting the ball awfully far with clubhead speeds that you wouldn't think possible. What do you think of his experiment?
Well, you know, we always wonder how important length is anywhere. And, you know, last week we're at Colonial, which is supposed to be a golf course where your length should not be an advantage. This week we're at Hilton Head, again, a place where you think your length should not be an advantage. However, when you're watching it on television and it looks like a video game and you're taking it over trees that you're not supposed to be taking it over because it would have been impossible to do back in the day, which is what some of these guys were doing, and they're coming out on the other side at 350 plus yards off the tee, that makes the golf course and that makes this whole situation a little more untenable. I just think that the golf course was shown up you know, they were 14 under, 15 under, which is pretty good at Colonial. But I think if they had a chance, if they had been playing regularly and these long guys had been playing out there before, because a lot of these guys had never seen that golf course because they would never have played it before, I think that they could do just as much damage on that golf course with their length as they can do anywhere else. So I was surprised by that. I was surprised by the fact that Bryson DeChambeau was out driving people like Dustin Johnson by 20 and 25 yards. I was surprised that Bryson decided that he needed to get longer, where Gary Woodland decided he needed to get thinner and skinnier, one of the probably longest hitters out there. I was surprised by the fact that these guys were hitting irons, including 6 irons, I think, on 17 off the tee. I mean, these are numbers that don't really equate to the normal amateur. And I think it really, for the first time ever, have I looking at it, saying to myself, there might be an issue out here now at this point. I mean, it's just, you can't, I think it's admirable that Bryson decided that he needed to get longer and has gotten longer. But if he can do that in 3 months, you know, that's not something that I think you want everybody to all of a sudden decide to ascribe to and everybody trying to get as long as they can.
Well, we have both been listening to Jack Nicklaus probably for the last 20 years saying something is going to have to be done to the golf ball or dial it back a little bit. Otherwise, too many great golf courses are going to become really obsolete. Do you think a little more credence goes to Jack Nicklaus after watching what we watched?
I think so, because it's a golf course where length was not supposed to be an advantage. I think, you know, you knew that you'd get to some places and length is, you know, an advantage, and you just lived with that. But this is a golf course that was basically for the short hitters, and now it's become a golf course for the long hitters.
All right, let's move it along here. I know your rate's very expensive, so we can't afford that much. But I want to talk about Ryder Cup. Now that they have an event to look at without spectators, as you indicated, seem to go rather smoothly. Do you think that adds to the argument that there is going to be a Ryder Cup this year without spectators, or what transpired at Colonial will have no bearing whatsoever?
Yeah, what happened at Colonial has no bearing on if they'll have a Ryder Cup with spectators or not. I find it at this point, in fact, I take that back. What transpired at Colonial is you heard two players, specifically Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy, say they really aren't interested in playing a Ryder Cup with no fans. You know, I think when you have a franchise as the Ryder Cup, you need to do everything possible to protect it, even in this day and age of 2020. And if you decide to have a golf tournament like that, a Ryder Cup like that, and these guys decide not to show up, I think that's a recipe for disaster for the future of the tournament. So I just think that you need to understand that these guys don't want to play if there's no fans, that if there's not players playing, this thing is not worth anything anyways. So you might as well just go with the flow and go with what the players are saying, which is basically, let's play, let's delay it for a year or 2 years, whatever it's going to be. Let's delay it and let's go back, because they have no interest in playing without fans.
What about the PGA Championship and the United States Open? Same criteria?
Yeah, well, the U.S., I mean, these are different events. I mean, obviously, we know the PGA and the U.S. Open are not going to be played with fans. In fact, they're going to even have a 2 weeks of the U.S. Open tennis in Flushing Meadows without fans. So, I mean, this is the new normal. You have to be prepared for this. But the Ryder Cup is such a different animal than anything else that we're talking about. You just, by not putting fans into the equation, which is fine, I understand the situation, you just have to understand the players have no desire to play in that environment. So that's just all there is to it. I mean, without the players, you have nothing.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.